Maybe if I hide out in this server room, they won't find me. They really seem to want me back, though. I don't know. Maybe I should just do an episode. Just remember, you asked for it. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 164 of Little Brother for the 16th of November, 2025. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. The politics blog electoralvote.com is reporting that under the Trump administration, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, better known as CISA, will no longer be able to provide support to state and local governments for election systems security. Historically, this has been a service that they provide because individual state and local governments are not well-resourced to do this. At this point, however, CISA's election monitoring room is closed, and state and local governments are on their own to keep the votes secure. What could possibly go wrong? However, even as there is no money for cybersecurity, there is for other components of the DHS. 404 Media is reporting that the Homeland Security Information Network, a law enforcement information sharing system, is being deployed to college football games. You know, to keep a watchful eye on the attendees. It was deployed to a recent game between Ole Miss and Georgia, and boasts the ability to loop in live feeds from stadium cameras and drone footage, as well as footage and data captured by police body cameras and individual cell phones. DHS have worked to get access to privately owned cameras as well, and facial recognition technologies from Clearview AI. The system was brought to light by a FOIA request from an organization called FOIA Ball. We'll talk more about FOIAs later. Wired is reporting about an aspect of the recent New York mayoral election that hasn't gotten much attention. Mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani, when he takes office in January, will be inheriting a vast surveillance infrastructure. In the period since 9/11, this infrastructure has grown in a barely controlled manner, using not just CCTV cameras, but also predictive policing practices, which use machine learning to predict crime. Unfortunately, such machine learning is fed from human activity, meaning that rather than making a system that is more equitable, it just simply reinforces existing human biases. As Mamdani is from one of the communities that has been impacted by these practices, it could be interesting to see what course corrections are applied. Finally, there is a spy satellite network that SpaceX created and deployed for the U.S. government called Starshield. There's nothing really odd about that so far. Spy satellites are nothing new, and for SpaceX to hold a government contract for one is unsurprising. for radio and space enthusiasts to be able to detect the signals from these satellites is also not unusual because, like any other radio transmitter, they, transmit radio waves. Amusingly, however, a ham radio operator named Scott Tilley has been able to detect the signals from this network on the wrong band. It seems as though the frequency band being used by Starshield satellites to send data to ground stations is one that is intended for sending data up from ground stations to satellites. It's hard to say whether this was a deliberate engineering decision or a clerical error. There is a risk, of course, that this may impact other satellite networks in place. However, due to the fairly narrow beams in use, this could turn out to be a non-issue. Only time will tell. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time. This Fortnite's Pwn is particularly spectacular. It is, in fact, a world-famous art gallery and museum, none other than Le Louvre in Paris. By now, you have no doubt already heard from other news sources about the theft of several jewels from the era of Napoleon Bonaparte from the Louvre. So what's the technology angle? Well, it's the video surveillance system. It's just, let's say, suboptimal. The headline from the French newspaper Libération read like a laundry list of IT security failings. It read, Louvre for a password. Obsolete software, impossible updates, 10 years of data security breaches at the premier museum of the world. I had to do a little digging to find out what they meant by impossible updates, but the gist of it is that they had no maintenance contract for the system, so firmware and software upgrades were just not available to them. Now, being out of date is not necessarily a major drag on a system whose job is just to capture video and stick it on a hard drive. That task hasn't honestly changed a whole lot in 20 or more years. However, if that system is connected to a network, that's a problem because it has security implications. However, the Achilles heel of the system, the thing that made it possible for unauthorized individuals to get into the system and alter its contents or disable bits of it entirely, was its password. The password was Louvre. I'm going to go out on a limb here and speculate also, since they stated that Louvre was the password, that the system was accessed through a shared account. That, of course, means that any audit trail that they could have had is completely useless. Don't be like the Louvre. Back in August of 2023, I broke out of my usual summer hiatus to tell you a story that had me absolutely hopping mad. If you want to revisit the episode, it's episode 133A, and I will include a link to the episode in the program notes. The episode largely centered around the idea of press freedom, and my main focus was on a small-town weekly newspaper from Marion, Kansas, called the Marion Recorder. To quickly recap the story, the owner of a diner, who was also politically connected, had a vendetta against the newspaper based on the newspaper holding her accountable for her behavior. The allegation was that the owner had a DWI on her record, which was relevant to her business because she was applying for a liquor license. The diner owner allegedly considered this to be a violation of her privacy. Even though a DWI conviction is a public record, she allegedly used her political connections to cause the county sheriff department to raid not only the newspaper office, but also the home of the newspaper's owners, Eric Meyer and his mother Joan, as well as some other journalists and a city councilor. One of the points that I mentioned then, and that I'm going to mention again now, is that Joan Meyer was 98 years old, and within a day or two of the raid, she died of a heart attack. Now, you can argue about whether or not there is a causal relationship between these two events, but since I am just a person with an opinion and not necessarily somebody making a legal one, I maintain now, as I did then, that these motherfuckers killed a 98-year-old woman over a vendetta because that woman owned a newspaper that held somebody accountable. Anyway, the reason I am bringing it up now is that there's news in the story. 2 years later, NPR station KCUR is reporting that Marion County is settling some of the lawsuits against them and issuing an apology. The county, or if we're being honest, the taxpayers of the county, are paying Eric Meyer, two other journalists who were raided, and a city councilor who was also raided, $3 million. In the meantime, Police Chief Gideon Cody is reported to be facing criminal charges, and there are other lawsuits related to the incident that are still pending. Of course, one fact remains unchanged. Joan Meyer is still dead. I've spoken a number of times about Flock Security. Most notably, I interviewed journalist Ethan Gregory Dodge back in 2022 on the topic, and I will include a link to the episode in the program notes. To recap, Flock Security is a company that installs automatic license plate readers, or ALPRs. Their cameras can be installed by a municipality, of course, but they're also happy to sell to neighborhood associations, malls, apartment complex, other commercial entities, probably even an individual if you got deep enough pockets. The thing is, Flock then aggregates the data from all of the cameras in their fleet into a common database, and the movements of vehicles observed by the cameras is for sale because of course it is. Now, between then and now, these cameras have been popping up a lot. Off the top of my head, I can think of at least six of them on public streets in places where I drive regularly. I passed two of them today. And I'm sure that if I were to slow down and look more closely, I'd probably find more of them. There are a bunch of them at Crossgates Mall in Albany, and I guess around 120 all told in this area. While a number of ideas have come to mind about how to tackle this invasion, I'm not going to share most of them because they largely rise to some form or other of vandalism or criminal mischief, and I'm really not interested in going there. I'm certainly not taking responsibility for my listeners going there. However, a new attack vector has been suggested in just the past few days. Apparently, this approach originated in Washington State, where it was discovered that a number of the Flock cameras were deployed by municipalities or by the law enforcement agencies that operate in those municipalities, because those are government entities. They are subject to public records requests. The argument goes like this. The cameras themselves are justified by stating that the information they collect is in public view and is therefore public information. Since it's public information, the record of it is a public record. In the case of Washington State, this has now been tried, and a judge agreed with that analysis. So, now the idea is to try this out in other parts of the country. Here in New York, it's not yet been tested, but I'd encourage my listeners to give it a rip wherever you might be. If you're not sure how to carry out a public records request, the web is at your disposal to figure it out, and I may do some content about it in a future episode. In the meantime, one of my listeners has mentioned that both 404 Media and Muckrock provide tools to perform Freedom of Information Act requests, or FOIA requests, did say I would mention them again, and that these may suffice. Both of those require user registration. As I say, I'll get into the details in a later episode, but if you have a basic understanding of it already, the idea here is to flood the municipalities that have bought these cameras with requests for content and data captured by the cameras. Keep it pertinent to your own vehicles so that it forces them to search for it. Keep in mind that some of these cameras are in privately owned spaces, such as the ones I mentioned being at the local mall, and those are not valid targets because their owners are not subject to the Freedom of Information laws. But if you hammer the government entities over the ones that they own, they may decide that the cameras are not worth the effort. But at the very least, you can help gum up the works. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. I've spoken before in the past about how robot vacuums have the ability to make a map of your house, and that because they are cloud connected, they can upload what they know about your home to entities who have no business knowing that information. For examples of this, go listen to episodes 96 and 112. In episode 96, I talked about the risk of one particular popular robot vacuum platform, and in 112, I brought news of that risk becoming realized. Now, I'm being a little cagey about the platform I spoke of then, because it's not the one that's in tonight's fail. In tonight's fail, an engineer by the name of Harishankar bought an iLife robot vacuum, and being an engineer, he got curious about what information it was sharing with its manufacturer. When he saw just how much information the vacuum was sharing, he was horrified, and he did the logical thing, something that an engineer could and would do, but what your typical user would not. He cut it off at his network. But he didn't just cut it off flat. He knew this thing was going to need occasional firmware updates, so he left the device with the ability to download those firmware updates, and it is through that the manufacturer sent a kill code. Now, Harishankar sent his robot vacuum for service a number of times, and each time after one of these shutdowns, the service center were unable to reproduce the problem. They would reset the device, which would remove the kill code. They'd put it on their network. They'd do a firmware update, which obviously their network wouldn't block the telemetry, and it would work as designed. In the end, what Harishankar ended up doing was creating a set of services running on a local machine that mimicked the behavior of the cloud-based services, but did not actually let iLife get the information. And the problem here is not that the problem is insoluble, rather, it's that the problem is not even necessary. There is no reason why this device ever needed to share telemetry to its manufacturer, as clearly demonstrated by the fact that once a dummy substitute was provided, it worked just fine without the privacy violation. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Azriel, Fungaboo, Chris S., Thriller at Play, Bodhi Cheetah, and Alex Marthews for story leads, and to the acts that slayed me, Andy, Kate, Fongaboo, Kylo Ren, Finnegan, Matt Martin, Denzuko, and Ed for taking part in the search party. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or just want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 165 will drop on November 30th. Stay safe and be well.
The thing!